I just got to listen to this girl play ukulele.
Nice.
And it really fucking made me very, very happy.
Oh, good.
And now every goddamn hippie with a ukulele on the trail learned to play that song, and I got to fucking listen to it in a shelter. It's bad enough I have to stay there as is.
And I just started playing uke, and I was just sitting there admiring how beautiful it was.
To Backpacker Radio, brought to you by The Trek. I am your host, Zach Badger Davis. This is the 9th episode of our Trail Correspondent Series, and boy, is this a fun, action-packed show. Today's edition is our wildcard episode, whereby our hikers were given a blank canvas in which they can paint whatever story or topic was most interesting to them. As you can probably imagine, subject matter runs the gamut. We hear about the overwhelming kindness of strangers, how much easier it is to be present on trail compared to our typical daily grind. We hear from someone attempting the 24 by 24 by 24 challenge. You will learn what this is later in the episode, but if you don't already know, let me just add this one disclaimer. Do not do this yourself. It's just a bad idea. That's all I'm going to say. We get a rather ornery update from Ivy Tat. Hangriness is a very real thing on trail, and similarly, Toons hypothesizes on why hikers complain so often, and her reason might surprise you. Fainting Goat, our soon-to-be triple crowner, gives us a nice contrast of the AT compared to the PCT. Rabbit, a fellow soon-to-be triple crowner, does the same, but from the perspective of her current trek on the CDT. We hear what it's like to go through a mental slump on trail, what it's like to maintain a hiking schedule, and why it's probably not the best approach for most people. Lucas shares one of his favorite lessons from the trail so far. Miles chats with a father-son tandem. This duo has an incredible story, and there's a lot of inspiration to glean from this conversation. And Sassafras riffs on the paradox between her body feeling stronger than ever and also simultaneously incredibly fragile. Enough from me, let's jump into the show. Here it is.
Okay, so for my wild card, I just want to comment on how much I love hikers, and especially these Appalachian Trail hikers. I have just fallen in love with the fact that everyone across the board has been so kind, so friendly, so willing to help and support and boost morale, and just, wow, I have been blown away by the kindness of heart that people allow to just flow from themselves out here. And I really wish that we did more of that, you know, off the trail. And I think what this has showed me is that I think people really are innately kind and generous and want to be helpful and supportive to other people, even total strangers. And, you know, I'm a little ashamed to admit that, you know, I've been pretty jaded by life. And, you know, I came out here a little fearful, a little distrusting. And I'm so grateful that that is no longer the case, that I'm going to be cautious always, you know, I think that's just common sense, but I don't think I'll ever carry with me any kind of preconceived notions of how people will treat me. And I hope that I carry that out, you know, carry that with me off the trail, that I will always assume everyone's a hiker on this planet, right? And everyone will really wants to give their best. And honestly, what I've noticed is, on the trail, people are out here because they love hiking. They love being in nature. And I honestly, these are my kind of people. So getting off the trail one day, like, I know it'll be a challenge because everyone off the trail, right, is we're consumed with daily, you know, to-dos and our survival and what it takes to kind of live in our own culture and society. And so we're not really present with ourselves or with each other, but on the trail, and I think what hiking gives you is a new form of presence And because of the miles you walk, surrounded by, I mean, all kinds of beauty, you do end up having this presence that, so when someone does cross your path, like, you're willing to give a smile, you know, you're willing to kind of show up. And you can tell who wants to stay and chat and who wants to keep walking, and there's no pressure either way, and it's kind of beautiful that people automatically kind of honor what the other person, where the other person is and what they need. And so, yeah, that's one of my favorite things so far is, yeah, man, Appalachian Trail hikers are the bomb. They're the best. They're much in all the positive sense of that phrase. So, yeah, that's my wild card. This is Liberty. Take care, guys.
Hey, 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 what's up, you hooligans? It's your boy, Ivy Tat, reporting live again from the Appalachian Trail. I am just before Max Patch. I'm going to head up on Max Patch tomorrow because I got my Bassahound Roscoe P. Waggletails joining me for a couple days in the hot springs, so I'm pretty stoked about that. But before I get all happy and sentimental about my dog, I'm going to give you a list of things that have pissed me off so far on the Appalachian Trail. So I thought this would be pretty funny, so here we go. Number one is snoring, okay? I avoid shelters at all costs for a reason, but when I went to the Great Smoky Mountain National Park, I was required to sleep in shelters, which is dumb, especially when you stack 22 hikers in a 12-person shelter. Real dumb. But anyway, I cannot sleep with a bunch of snorers, and the guy in the Tri-County shelter, the last one I slept in the Great Smoky Mountain National Park, happened to be snoring for about 8 hours straight, and I didn't get a wink of fucking sleep, so fuck you, whoever that guy was. Pissed me right off. The second thing that pisses me off on the Appalachian Trail is the term trail magic. All right, okay, trail magic, it's cool, I accept it, but I do not call it trail magic, okay? Unless your name is Harry fucking Potter and you have a magical wand in your hand, you are not a magician, okay? I refer to trail magic as free shit, and if you give out free shit, you are a free shitter, okay? Just because you went to Costco and picked up a bunch of Snickers bars and threw them on the side of a trail does not make you a magician. Thank you very much. The third thing that has pissed me off on the Appalachian Trail so far is the shelter previous to the one I told you about in the Snorer. This is also in the Great Smoky Mountain National Park. Was the asshole with the ukulele playing the song Wagon Wheel. I absolutely hate that song, the Wagon Wheel. Okay, it was cool when Old Coral Medicine Show did it, what, 15, 20 years ago? But then good old Hootie and the Blowfish came around, and now every goddamn hippie with the ukulele on the trail learned to play that song, and I gotta fucking listen to it in a shelter? It's bad enough I have to stay there as is. I don't want to listen to your dumbass jam band play Wagon Wheel. Fuck off with your ukulele. Thank you. The next thing that pisses me off on the Appalachian Trail so far is trying to pass people on the trail. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not flying down the trail at 100 miles an hour. I like to think I move at a steady, normal pace as everybody else. But every now and again, you get across, especially a group of hikers that are talking up a storm, not listening to anything around the trail, not listening to their surroundings, and no matter how many sticks, no matter how many rocks I bang my trekking poles up against, they do not hear my ass coming. What do I got to do? Jump around like a fucking grizzly bear? Keep your ears open, people on the trail. There's other people out there, and maybe one of those people wants to move at a normal pace and pass your slow ass. Thank you very much. All right, the next thing has pissed me off. Not so much trail-related, but I took a 0 day in lovely Franklin, North Carolina. Beautiful town. And about 9 p.m., I started to get hungry as all hell, so I ordered a pizza from Domino's. Well, I waited around till 10 p.m., still no pizza. I called Domino's. Apparently, those a-holes, even though I told them I was staying at Baltimore Jack's Hostel. How many hostels are there in Franklin? I don't know, but there can't be too many. And Baltimore Jack's is a pretty fucking famous place. They decided to deliver my large pepperoni pizza to the hostel way the hell on the other side of the town. So now I have to call back Domino's. They have to remake my pizza, and I don't get the damn thing till 10:30. I ate it out of spite. I wasn't hungry then. I was pissed off, but I ate it out of spite. They did not get a tip. Step up your game, Franklin, North Carolina Domino's. And the final thing that's pissed me off so far on the Appalachian Trail is the black bear in the Motel 6 in Gatlinburg, Tennessee. Yep, that's right, the Motel 6. I spent the first two days hiking through the Smokies looking for black bears, did not see one. It took me going into Gatlinburg, Tennessee to see a black bear. I get a hotel room, after hiking an 18-mile day through the pissing rain, even though I knew I was going out in the rain the very next day, I just wanted a hot damn shower and I wanted a dry bed. So there I am sleeping away, comfortable as all hell, and I hear a bunch of banging outside my hotel room. I figured it was a bunch of drunk hikers because that fucking hotel was packed that night full of hikers. But I get up finally out of the bed and I open up the door and I look outside and what do I see? Good old Smokey the Bear tipping over trash cans right in the breezeway of the Motel 6. Apparently, I've been told after the fact that this same black bear makes the rounds to every hotel in Gatlinburg, Tennessee and does this every damn night. So I don't know. I'm not the smartest man in the world, but if I owned a hotel and I was in Gatlinburg and I know there's black bears in the area, I would not put trash cans right in the breezeway of a motel, especially if this bear is doing it all the goddamn time. Luckily, a couple days later, I got to see a black bear in the wild cross the trail, but I thought it was just funny that I hiked 2 days through the Smokies, did not see a bear. It took me going into Gatlinburg, Tennessee to actually see one for the first time. Pretty damn hilarious, if you ask me. Well, there you go, folks. That's the so far the list of things that pissed me off so far on the Appalachian Trail. I'm sure there'll be a million more, but there are a million more reasons why I'm happier than a pig and shit on the trail. Don't get me wrong. I'm having a great time. This is a dream come true. Absolute freedom. I couldn't be happier. But I just thought it'd be funny to throw this list out there because there is some shit that pisses me off from time to time. And, yeah, that's about it. This is your boy, Abby Tad. We'll holler at you mofos later.
Hey guys, this is Fainting Goat recording from a couple miles south of Parisburg, Virginia. You know, I tried to get you an interview with one of the Grayson Highland ponies a couple days ago, but he realized that I wasn't going to share my Fritos, got a little upset, and walked off in a huff, so that didn't go so well. Anyways, you've just got me monologuing at you again this time, and things are going pretty well. Everybody talks about how Virginia miles are a little bit easier, and I found that to be true. I actually had a little bit of a deficit to make up to get back on track for my 100-day hiking plan because I made the mistake I always do. Started out and I was fresh and excited to be out there, went a little too fast, and my body was complaining. So I scaled back the mileage, took a few unplanned zeros, and now I've been able to ramp up pretty well. I've been doing about 30 miles a day, at least on days that I'm not resupplying, since I crossed the border into Virginia, and did a couple extra yesterday thanks to a prescribed burn right about where I wanted to camp. As far as fire detours go, this was the nicest and easiest one I have ever done. Ended up just being a little bit of a gravel road walk for about 2 miles that paralleled the trail, linked right back up, so didn't add any extra mileage and was probably actually easier than walking the trail through that section. But it did force me to go a couple miles extra until I found a nice place to flop down and cowboy camp for the night. I'm definitely looking forward to a bit of a break in town here. Had less than 10 miles to get there this morning, and I'm going to take the rest of the day off to rest. Haven't really had a break since Gatlinburg. I've just been pushing and enjoying the feeling that my legs are finally adapting to this, and I can do miles again. So one thing I wanted to talk about today is some of the advantages of the Appalachian Trail. I think having done the Western trails, which frankly reward you a lot more for the work you do, it sometimes can be easy to get a bit down on this trail. But to be honest, I'm still really enjoying my time out here. And there's some things you get on the AT that you really don't get anywhere else. One of those, of course, and it's a good and a bad, is the fact that you're never really very far from a town. So while I occasionally wish that I felt a little more like I was in the wilderness, there are some real perks to that. For example, yesterday I got a couple miles in and the trail crossed a highway. Happened to be a little general store that served some food there, and they were willing to make me a milkshake at 8:30 in the morning, which was awesome. Hiker hunger, of course, is legendary, and I know I'm feeling it quite a bit at 630 miles in. I go stoveless, and I buy my resupplies as I go, whenever possible. Those are my preference for a multitude of reasons, which mostly come down to laziness, no cooking, no cleaning, and being able to eat as soon as I get to camp. But it does mean that my diet out here pretty much resembles a list of all the junk foods that my parents wouldn't let me have when I was a kid. It's fun for a couple days, but it also means that hot food is a luxury, cold food is a luxury, and anything that still resembles a plant is a luxury. And all in all, the AT gives you a little more access to those luxuries than the other trails. It also means that resupply intervals are short. I haven't had to carry more than 3 days of food out here, and I expect that to continue for quite a while. It means that there's a lot less pressure to do miles, so you can go fast if you want to, but if you want to go slower, take your time, you also have the option to do that. You are naturally pretty limited by weather windows on both the PCT and CDT, and also by the long stretches between water and resupplies in some areas of both of those trails. Forces you to go a little bit faster. Here you have a much wider weather window and abundant water and resupply options. And speaking of the water, every source out here has been beautiful. It's abundant, it's clear, and it's usually coming from a spring with a pipe installed for convenient filling of your bottles. I haven't had to drink from a single cow trough, and I expect that I won't have to, which makes me pretty happy. Moving on, I've also appreciated the fact that mostly walking through living forests out here, one thing that really struck me on the CDT was the fact that you get out of the desert and you think you're going to go into some forested areas in Colorado and Montana, and pretty much every forest is dead. Between blister beetles or recent burns, you don't see a whole lot of living trees. PCT isn't quite as stark, but still lots and lots of burned forest. Some of that is just due to the differences in ecology of the areas. The West in general has a much shorter burn interval, but it is nice to see a bunch of leafy green trees, quite a bit of plant biodiversity. I have been making a habit of trying to learn something new every day. I do a new plant, a new bird call, and there are so many opportunities to do that out here, especially because I've never really spent any time on the East Coast until now, so there is lots of new stuff. And I think in general, this trail is a nice one to appreciate on the small scale. You don't get the big sweeping views or dramatic changes in terrain nearly as often here. There is a lot of diversity in just the natural world around you on this trail. And if you put a little bit of effort into learning about it as you go, you just appreciate it more and more and realize that you will never learn all of it, which is pretty fun. Finally, of course, you have the people. I've really appreciated that, especially with the shelter systems out here. I don't have to camp alone if I don't want to. If I am getting tired of the solo hiking thing and just want to have a conversation with some fellow hikers, all I have to do is go camp at a shelter for the night, and there's almost guaranteed to be at least half a dozen people around. I've always found the hiking community to be very welcoming and fun to get to know. That's no exception on this trail. I do think you also get a little bit more diversity in the types of people that are out here because the trail is so close to a lot of population centers, and you get more people that are out here for a weekend, for a section, as well as the through hikers, and that certainly keeps it interesting. Anyways, I've been rambling on for a while, and I can see town there below me. I know that in another 2 or 3 miles, I will have access to a hostel bed, a shower, laundry, and of course some delicious food. So I'm going to let y'all go for now. Fainting Goat out.
Hi, this is Sassafras reporting live from the trail. I actually just recently passed my 50-day mark on the trail, and as you might imagine, along with that little happy anniversary, there's a whole lot of stuff I've been thinking about. So for me, at this point on the trail, there's this weird paradox between feeling like my body is the strongest that it's ever been and also feeling really aware of just how fragile my body is. So when I hit the trail, I was actually in pretty good shape. I'd trained for and competed in my first 2 sprint triathlons last year, and I'd not been training as aggressively because I was in physical therapy recovering some tendonitis, but I'd been training 6 or 7 days a week off and on for about 9 months before I hit the trail. So I thought I was in pretty good shape, but the nature of triathlon is that you're sort of constantly cross-training, and so you're never really specializing in any one sport. And through hiking is, you know, all hiking all the time. And that was a really big change for my body. And I've kind of watched it over the last month and a half become optimized toward through hiking. And I feel really strong and powerful and pretty well adjusted to that at this point. But at the same time, I feel more aware than ever of just how fragile my body is, how easy it is to have one misstep that, you know, makes you roll an ankle a little bit. And that feeling when it rolls that you're just so thankful that it wasn't worse than that. I feel like every day there's a step or a slide or something that I imagine, oh, wow, that could have been so much worse than it was. And so in the midst of feeling really strong, I also feel very aware of my body's limits. And that's a trend that I've actually talked over with several other through hikers, you know, while we've been out here. And most of them just say, oh, yeah, I feel like I'm just one, you know, distracted step away from major injury. One of the other ones said, you know, every hiker is managing some kind of injury or pain all the time. And that's the thing that you notice until you get an injury or pain that's worse. And then that's the one that you notice. So for a lot of folks, it's, you know, problems with their feet, blisters, in my case, Morton's neuroma, all kinds of weird mystery pains, tendonitis. Some folks have knee issues. Some folks have hip problems, shoulders. Everybody, it seems, is managing something all the time. And so in the midst of doing this kind of amazing endurance feat, we're all also kind of constantly managing some kind of low level or not so low level pain. So for me, that's manifested in a bunch of kind of interesting ways. I haven't done the miles that I thought I'd be doing. At this point, I'm pretty consistently doing 17 or 18 mile days, sometimes up to 22 or 23, but I haven't pulled a marathon day. I haven't pulled a 30 mile day. And that's mostly because I'm still kind of tender with my feet. They're doing better than they've been doing for sure. But, I'm a lot more careful with them now than I was, you know, back in the Smokies when I pounded them and they really, really hurt. And I've had to focus a lot more on self-care. And for me, that's meant, you know, I have to take breaks periodically to stop and massage my feet to get the feeling back into them and to get them to stop hurting. So sometimes that's a break every mile. Sometimes it's a break every 4 miles. A lot of it has to do with the temperature. Hotter temps make me have to stop more often because my feet tend to swell more. And a lot of it has to do with terrain. So the steeper the grade on an ascent or descent, the more likely I'm going to have issues. The more rocks and roots, the more likely I'm going to have issues. Obviously, the flatter and more level the terrain, the better I do. And I've just kind of had to accept those limitations and recognize that those are the parameters I've been given. I was chatting with a couple section hikers the other day, and they were noting, they said something like, you know, well, we went out to do this hike and it's not the hike that we expected, but it was the hike that we'd been given. And that to me is really the shift in my own mentality. This hasn't turned out to be the hike that I expected, but it's the hike that I've been given, and I'm trying to hike it to the best of my ability within the parameters that I've been given. And those parameters are always very physically bounded by the body that I'm in, by the injuries that I'm managing. So it's been interesting. I love streams, creeks, rivers, because soaking my feet has been amazing. my daily regimen now is really different. So much foot care. I can't tell you enough. Foot care is so important out here. So I typically start out the morning putting some homemade arnica tincture that my sister made for me on my feet, because that helps with the swelling. I'll typically kind of doctor anything that looks like it's blistering or being awkward. Then I'll hike with that for a while. I'll usually have to stop to massage my feet at least 4 times over the course of a day. And pretty much any time that I take a break, I sit down, get off my feet, wherever possible, I take my shoes off. And if it seems feasible, I'll take my socks off too. I'll massage my feet. I typically reapply the arnica a couple times a day. And if I can, I'll soak my feet at least at the end of the day and on hot days, basically any chance I get. And I'm doing foot massage. When I find good sized rocks, I'll roll my feet. I sleep in a hammock, so my feet are elevated all the time, which is awesome. Highly recommend that if you're having foot issues. And, aside from that, it's amazing to feel like my legs and my body are so strong. And then that's always bounded by what my feet seem capable of. And so when other hikers ask me, how far are you trying to get today? My answer is pretty much always, however far my body lets me get today. And I'm sure they think that I'm being intentionally vague, but the truth is I don't know. I could go out and have a great day and pull a 22, or I could go out and struggle to get a 15. And the terrain might be the same those 2 days. I just might have a better foot day one day than the other. So it's really humbling. And it's really interesting to have a body that I both trust implicitly, but also feel like, you know, there are these two loose cannons that happen to be my feet, which when you're hiking are pretty important. So that's what I've been thinking a lot about, foot care and strength and fragility and it's definitely an adventure. But I would say to all of you who are hiking or thinking about hiking that you really just have to embrace the hike that you've been given instead of trying to force it to be the hike that you thought you were getting into. Live from the trail with Sassafras. It's a beautiful day to be on trail.
Alrighty. Hey everyone, it is Buns checking in. I am currently walking through the Vasquez Rocks, which are beautiful geological rock formations. I pushed a bigger day, and I also convinced one of my buddies, Bones, to do it as well. We hiked 34 miles to get here, and it's overcast. We wanted to catch a sweet sunset, and I do not think we're going to get it. So right now I'm currently debating whether or not to go eat my disappointment away at Mexican or pizza. Anyways, we typically are given a theme, and this week Zach did not give us one, which for anyone who's a through hiker knows that we don't have to make a lot of unguided decisions. So he really stuck us with that, but I'm going to do my best. So here goes. Anyways, this is the next morning, but Bones and I decided to camp out at the rocks and hopefully catch a sunrise, but now it's kind of misting. So no sunset, no sunrise, but he reminded me that that's just all part of it. And you know, sometimes you get the good stuff and sometimes it doesn't work out. But I decided that I want to talk about one of my best days on trail. And that was the day leaving Paradise Valley Cafe. Last year, I really enjoyed that section and I knew that I would likely enjoy it again. But similar to last year, I took off out of the gates. I think, you know, once again, trying to impress others with a little bit of my pace, and I was just missing it again. And I talked to Bones a little bit beforehand about that experience and how much I like this and what my plans were for the day. And he didn't really, it seemed like, comprehend why I was going so fast. And so I was ahead of the three other people I had started with that day. And then all of a sudden I had kind of a epiphany where I realized that, you know, there's no point in rushing to wait or like speeding up to slow down. You know, if you're missing all the good stuff while you're going too fast. And so about halfway up, I just sat on a rock and I enjoyed the beautiful valley for a little while. And then I got up again and I hiked a little more and I found this little spot, this little nook. And I just started playing uke and I was just sitting there admiring how beautiful it was. And I wrote a poem about it called Where I Learned to Saunter, and I was just having a great time. One of the things I did before I left was I played the ukulele at my friend's gravesite, and he's got these little windmills, and while I was playing, the wind just started blowing through really hard and spinning the windmills. And similarly to that day, when I was in that little nook, I started playing the uke, and sure enough, the wind really picked up, and it was really kind of a nice thing. And oftentimes, I will take kind of signs like that as, you know, a little hello from a loved one who's passed on. But yeah, I was just really enjoying the day, and I was loving that I had really, I think, finally figured out what it means to slow down and enjoy the beautiful places along the trail. And, you know, you can still do miles and struggle through the hard parts to, you know, make sure you really enjoy the beautiful sections. And finally, when I decided it was time to move along and get up to the ridge and hopefully catch some more beautiful sights up there, I put my hand down to get up, and right next to my hand was a little heart rock. And I will send pictures of heart rocks along the trail to that friend who passed away, his mom, kind of as a, I don't know, it's just one of our things, because she helped me prepare last year, and I think it's a good way to see him out on trail. And so, yeah, there was just a heart rock there, and I thought, man, like, what a perfect ending to this moment. And my buddy Josh was just there with me, and he helped me learn how to saunter and enjoy all the beauty that's out here on trail. And I've often thought of that moment, and I think that I feel really fortunate that Bones and Josh and Dee Dee helped get me there. So, yeah, that was one of the most beautiful experiences I've had on trail this year or last. And I think it's just important to make sure we're not forgetting to enjoy all the amazing, wonderful things we're going by. 'Cause so often I think we'll get caught up in miles, or people just get their heads down a little bit on a harder day and forget to experience all the beautiful things that are going on around them. And I've even seen people at certain times, you know, get so locked in just with kind of almost horse blinders on that they don't see you when you're sitting 5 feet off trail, because they're, you know, either so focused or, you know, just trying to get through the day. But I think it's just really important to every once in a while, you know, look around. And one thing I've started doing is looking behind me, because looking, you know, as if you were a so bower instead of a no bower, you see a whole different trail. So I just think don't forget to do those little things, and they're just going to make the experience so much better. But yeah, that was my day, and thanks for letting me share it. All right, everyone. Lucas out. Have a good one.
Hey, Backpacker Radio, it's Madeline. I remain trail nameless for now. For this week's trail correspondence, free play mystery grab bag, I decided to give you some updates from my buddy on the trail who decided to do the iconic, the legendary, the oh-so-controversial 24-24-24 challenge. If you haven't heard of it, that's 24 beers in 24 hours on the 24-mile stretch between Hiker Heaven and Casa de Luna. A couple of notes to avoid the risk of defamation. My interviewee has decided to remain anonymous. And also, I apologize in advance for any profanity and sloppiness. All right, it's the morning of the 24-24-24 challenge. The birds are chirping. The sun is rising. How do you feel?
I wish the sun was rising a bit more. It's a bit overcast.
It is overcast.
We're hoping that's not a bad omen, but nerves are definitely firing. And we got to go pick up our precious cargo right now.
Cereal beers in. Are you going to carry them all yourself?
Absolutely.
Like a goddamn champion. Okay. Right, see you down the road.
Sweet.
All right. We're about 9 miles in. And how many beers in?
I just finished 13.
13. So you're ahead of the curve. He's got a beer tally on his right thigh, mm-hmm. a piss tally on his left. He hasn't peed very many times. How many times have you peed?
I'm at about 7, meaning that I am not so efficient. I'm drinking 2 beers for every piss that I have to take.
And how do you feel?
I feel like the clouds of my life have burned off, and now I'm facing a bright blue sunny day.
That is super optimistic. That's awesome. All right, well, on a scale of 1 to 10, what is your level of drunk?
My scale goes past 10.
Uh-huh.
But right now, I'd say on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm at about a 6. 6
All
out
right.
of 10.
I buy it. Catch you later.
Oh, fuck yeah.
All right, it's 3:44 in the afternoon. How many beers have you had?
I've had 17 beers.
Maybe. more?
Maybe 19
should we,
or 20.
Should we check the tally? 17. Says 17. No. Okay, well, so he's lost
the
count.
Says
something.
Yeah.
How confident are you that you're going to finish the challenge?
So we have 6.9 more miles.
Mm-hmm.
I think I have something in the range of 5 to 8 beers. Probably 6 at the most. And I'm feeling super fucking confident.
All right. And do you have any words of wisdom?
No, definitely not yet. Talk to me in 5 beers.
In 5 beers. Okay. Yeah. How many hours do you have left?
More than 12.
Damn, you're cruising.
Less than...
We have 9.
Less than...
We have 15
yeah,
hours.
15 hours.
And on a scale of 1 to 10, how drunk are you?
Like a 6 out of 10.
Oh, stand steady.
Mm-hmm. But now I got high as shit, so now things are interrupted a little bit.
In a good way or a bad way?
In a fantastic way. I just got to listen to this girl play ukulele.
Nice.
And it really fucking made me very, very happy.
Oh, good.
All right. I have a lot of, happiness to walk down the trail.
Aww,
just 7 more miles.
That's so sweet. All right. Catch you later. All right, here we are at Casa de Luna. We have a successful 24-24-24 champion.
Hey.
How do you feel?
I feel pretty good.
On a scale of 1 to drunk?
7 out of 10.
All right, so a little higher.
A little higher. We've been incrementally going up all day.
Everybody was a little worried because you didn't arrive here until after dark. Can you explain why that might be?
Yeah, well, the biggest journey everybody thought was going to be a physical one.
Uh-huh.
But it turns out that it was a spiritual one.
Oh, yeah?
And so it took us a little bit longer to find our inner peace,
mm-hmm.
to conquer our enemies.
Your enemies.
Our shadows.
Uh-huh.
And to make it here.
Yeah.
And we're pretty proud that we made it.
Yeah.
And also that we're not fucking raging pieces of shit right now.
Yeah.
That we're doing okay.
So how does it feel to be a success, to be a hero?
So in terms of arbitrary championships,
uh-huh.
it feels pretty fucking good.
It does. Good. Do you think it's worth it?
I would recommend it to any shining young buck trying to prove himself in the backcountry. But this is a great challenge.
And how many hours do you have left? Do you know?
Beer in bed.
It's like, I think I still have like 10 hours.
Yeah, so you did it with time to spare. Easy.
Mm-hmm.
So you both did 10 by 10. A whole new meaning of 10 by 10.
We definitely didn't do 10 miles.
30 seconds left.
Oh, 30 seconds to go.
Like a champion.
All it took was a quote from Good Will Hunting.
And what would that quote be?
It's not your fault.
It's not your fault.
It's not your fault.
Okay, any parting words of wisdom?
I would say that, like, if you're not comfortable combining copious amounts of alcohol with backcountry steaks, I would say this challenge isn't for you.
Mm-hmm.
But for me and my friends, it was exactly what we wanted.
Beautiful. Thank you so much.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Backpacker Radio on the Pacific Crest Trail. This is Miles to Go, checking in from mile 328.1 at Cleghorn Picnic Area at Silverwood Lake in California. And just a quick update on the PCT Poop Challenge, unofficial, still going strong on 328 miles in. I am trying my hardest to make it to Wrightwood at mile 369. But there's also the McDonald's challenge to contend with. I have to sort of pick or choose, can't do both. I think it might be humanly impossible to do that. So we'll see how the next couple of days go. But anyway, that's the update there. And now to introduce my esteemed hiking colleagues. Today joining me are Paparazzi and Freight Train from the Sacramento area. And I know you told me the small, maybe not small town, but the town that you're from that I immediately forgot because I don't know where it is. So where are you guys from?
Cameron Park, California, east of Sacramento.
Okay, there you go. And you are?
Steve Sellers, our Freight Train.
Freight Train, and you are?
Sean Sellers, or Paparazzi.
And you guys are?
Father and son.
Father and son, hiking the Pacific Crest Trail together. Okay, so let's get right into it. You don't see too many parent-child hikers together out here. So first of all, how old are each of you and how long have you guys been backpacking?
I'm a 65 father, I hope. And I started backpacking in the 70s and when I was kind of a late teens, early 20s. And I kind of took Sean out on his first backpacking trip when he was seven out of Tuolumne Meadows. So, you know, we lived close to Yosemite in the Sierra, so we tried to do it in camp and backpack. And I kind of got away from it with my career, but been doing a little bit more lately since I retired.
And, well, obviously, started backpacking when I was, 34, just turned 34 in March. So, yeah, I think, gosh, I even went camp. You guys took me camping before then, 4-7, wasn't it?
You're an infant.
Yeah. So it's been something I've been doing, like, my entire life.
And you were telling me earlier tonight you've done most of your backpacking has been in the Sierra Nevada range, right?
Mostly in the Sierra, bit of like the California coast, like Point Reyes, and like big, a little bit in the Big Sur area.
And is this your first time backpacking a long distance together?
Together,
yes. Short trips before that, you know, 2 or 3 days. I think we did 4 or 5 days. It was the longest trip one time.
It was 5. Yeah.
Okay. And so Paparazzi, you're attempting to go all the way through from Mexico to Canada. And Freight Train, how long do you plan on being out here for?
From Campo to somewhere in the Tahoe area near home.
Okay, and how many miles would that be?
About 1,000.
More like 1,200.
1,200, yeah.
Don't sell yourself short now.
Something like 12. I think I estimated 1,300 originally.
Okay, so what made you guys want to do it together, for hiking together for over 1,000 miles, when the most you'd ever done was maybe just a few days?
Well, I mean, the plan to do the trail was initially mine on my own. I did it in 2016, not necessarily as a through hike attempt, but more just kind of running away from everything I possibly could for a number of months. It seemed like a good out. But then when I told him I was planning on doing the whole thing in 2018, he said he wanted to join me for, I don't know if it was like right off the bat, but, or like after, a little bit after, it's like, I'd like to join you for the High Sierra. And then the High Sierra, or the John Muir Trail. Then the John Muir Trail turned into the High Sierra. Then the High Sierra turned into, I'll just start with you.
Yeah, the John Muir Trail was always a dream of mine to do, mm-hmm. you know. And since I retired, I was able to do it. Then I said, well, talking to my wife and Sean's mom, it's like, you know, why don't you just start in Mexico and see how it goes? You know, so it's okay.
And so did you through, paparazzi, sorry, did you through hike completely in 2016? Did you do the whole thing?
I did Campo to Sonora Pass,
okay.
minus a couple fire closures and a hitch when we got tired of the desert.
Okay. And you said you were sort of running away from stuff. Yeah. Do you find that backpacking is sort of a therapeutic endeavor for you?
Absolutely, yeah.
And in what way specifically? And how did the PCT sort of help you through with whatever you were doing?
Well, it's sort of indirectly. I don't know. It's kind of complicated. So, like, I'm an alcoholic, and basically all the chaos that had created in my life sort of put me to a point where I was just done with everything, and my only solution was to run away from it all, and going to the mountains was a fix to that. It wasn't necessarily an end,
mm-hmm.
like I thought it was going to fix anything, but it sort of, it put a couple select people in my life and kind of got me to a place where I was ready to actually do what the hell I needed to do to fix all the mm-hmm. shit that I caused. So that's now coming out this time is kind of like make it feels like things are coming full circle with it. Like I kind of almost like owe it to the trail to complete it because of what it's done for me in a sense.
Mm. And Freytrin, do you feel like you're hiking with him for a reason connected with that?
Partly, yes. I mean, Sean and I have had a strained relationship when he was a teenager and a little later, and then when he was a few years ago. Linda and I have always, my wife, have always been very supportive, you know, if he's on the right track, supporting him. So, yeah, there was part of that, but part of it's for me, too. You know, I've always wanted to do this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's both.
Do you feel like being out here, you're getting to know him, or and paparazzi for you as well? Do you feel like you're getting to know each other in a way that you didn't know the person beforehand? And in what way?
For me, I see Sean the man, you know, because it's hard sometimes to see your kids and not think of them as your children. But I see Sean the man. He's very organized, very meticulous, has a lot of good advice, very resourceful. So, I really... would not have seen that out here if I hadn't been out here with him. I don't know about you. I think he may see some interesting things with me, but we'll see what you say.
No, honestly, I'm very impressed. I wasn't quite sure what, you know, it's a very, I don't know if delicate situation is the right term for it, but, you know, you're a 65-year-old man, or father, you're not really, like, sure, I know he does a lot of cycling and stuff, but this is, I don't know. It's been fun. It's been interesting. Seeing the side of him that I think it's true with any people that come out here together, you see a different side of him than you do in normal life.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a lot of fun.
He's learned that I'm not perfect, I think.
You weren't. You aren't perfect?
It was a big surprise.
That is quite a revelation. Wow. And it only took 328 miles for that to come out, not the full 1,200.
He probably never thought I was perfect, but he sure found out it was.
Do you feel like you guys have, or that you've regained something from the relationship that might have been lost in your teen years and during the years when you were sort of battling some...
I don't know if that's something that you can regain mm-hmm. necessarily, but I feel like it's a good way to sort of, I guess, kind of make up for lost time. It's a bit of, I think about it quite a bit out here. It's like, you know, all those years I was just dicking off, we could have actually been doing stuff like this together, but... try not to dwell too much in the past and make the best of what we have now.
Yeah, it's always about moving on, just like the trail. You know, we got the day tomorrow, and we did what we did, but we'll see what we face. So it's really about moving on. You mm-hmm. know, the past is done, so we would look at the future quite a bit.
And what do you feel confident in making it the full 1,200 at this point? I know that that's far in the future, but
I do. I'm you know. I think, and I wouldn't make a blanket statement about being older, but for me, you know, a lot of the uphills and the warm weather, you know, I slow down quite a bit. So the climb up to San Jacinto. That was very trying. But, yeah, I made it, and we did good. We're on our average that we anticipated, mm-hmm. mileage-wise.
Which is?
15 a day, at least.
15 a day.
We've done a number of 20s. So, you know, we're feeling pretty good about that. We got a big climb coming up in a couple days. But
did you guys do any prep work before this, like, as far as going out on hikes together and, like, testing gear?
A bit. Like, we started sort of, like, gear testing, 9 months ago or so. And a number of training hikes, and just walking around the hills in the neighborhood a little bit. I worked up until 10 days before starting, so it was a little bit hard until I took like 2 weeks off almost. But we got some training hikes in then.
And I'm a cyclist, so I was able to do that pretty much up close to when we started our intensive training.
Does it surprise you at all? Maybe it shouldn't surprise you, but to see some of the younger folks out here taking 3-0s and having to recoup their bodies physically, and you're still out here just plugging away 15-20 mile days.
I guess that's why I have the freight train name, but you know, everybody's different. You know, I'm sure if you went out and assessed it, there's a lot of people in the older age groups that are kind of doing the same thing as some of the younger people. You have injuries, mm-hmm. you know, stresses. That's just, you know, part of the human condition. It happens to anyone. So that's not really, it doesn't surprise me really.
Did you feel that there was any urgency to do this hike with your son now rather than putting it off?
Yes.
And in what way?
Only because it takes a great deal of effort and planning and money and trying to coordinate his schedule and mine. I mean, mine's a little flexible, and then balancing my home life. You know, I have a house and my wife and all that. So, I think it would have been harder if I waited. Not because of age or anything, but just because of all the logistics. The timing was really nice on this one. So he could get a leave of absence from work, you know, and stuff like that. So,
and would you, this goes for both of you, would you recommend the experience of hiking with a parent or child to anyone else, and what advice would you give them?
Oh gosh,
that's a loaded question. Yeah. And everyone's experience is their own experience, so it's hard to sort of.
I think my opinion on that would kind of be like it's not necessarily father, son, mother, daughter, whatever. It's like any sort of couple, friends, whatever, coming out here. It's important to not lose track of what you're, and really anybody out here, not to lose track of what personally brought you out here, and making sure that you're both kind of on the same page with that, at least a little bit. And, you know, knowing in advance and that there's, you know, there's going to be certain compromises that both people have to make, and just, you know,
I think that's a good point. You know, you bring who you are out here. So if you're depending on what kind of parent you're, if you're especially younger, it's good. I mean, any nature exposure, I think, is really good.
Yes.
I mean, I'm totally on board with that. It's not, but you also bring your baggage with you. You got to understand that and try to maybe back off a little bit sometimes.
It's not just what's in your pack you're carrying around out here.
Maybe sometimes you want to be dad, but you know what? That's a man I'm looking at over there. Not, he's my son, but he's a man.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you just got to learn to, like Sean said, support one another and talk to one another, and you know, it's been good.
Last two questions, follow up for you, Paparazzi. Do you credit your parents exposing you to nature and backpacking at an early age to your love of the outdoors now?
Absolutely. Between them getting me out there at a very young age, and I was fortunate to go to an elementary school where we went on a number of like week-long field trips to places like Yosemite, Calaveras Big Trees, Marin Headlands out by San Francisco. So that I had quite a bit of exposure to camping and backpacking and stuff from a young age.
And do you feel like what they did at an early age helped sort of save, might be too weighty a term, but help you through stuff later in your life that you didn't realize at the time that it was going to come back to play such a big role? Or did you always feel like this is a really big cornerstone of my life, that being outdoors is really, or was it something that you sort of came back to later
on? Something I came back to, sort of like with my dad, with his career kind of getting in the way of things. It's like my career and my whole struggle with addiction and stuff kind of got in the way of all of that. And then just in 2016 coming out here, it really sort of all came back, and it's like, wow, okay, there's a reason why I've always sort of, like, over the years, I'd buy a new tent and it would sit in my closet for 2 years until I finally went camping. It's like the intent was always there,
mm-hmm.
but I just always let life and get in the way and make excuses, essentially. So it was, that 2016 was definitely a turning point of like, okay, this is what makes me happy. Like, this is where I feel close to whatever higher power is out there. Like, this is where I belong, kind of.
Yeah. And you mentioned, I think this is a really good point, that when you hike with someone else, you both have to know why you're out here and that you're sort of on the same page. So if you could just sort of summarize to close things out, why are you out here in like one sentence?
I'm out here to fulfill a dream of, you know, long-haul backpacking that I've had, and to be with support my son and be with him and experience just me and him together on the trail.
And paparazzi?
Oh, gosh.
It might be a loaded sentence.
Challenge, accomplishment, peace, serenity, and bonding quality time with my father.
Awesome. Well, those are great closing words. And with that, I will end this correspondence on the PCT. And signing off until later on down the trail with 2,324.5 miles to go.
Good morning. It is Tunes checking in from the Pacific Crest Trail here near mile 500. Crazy. So I'm at like 501 point something right now. I'm sitting in my tent. It's 7:18 in the morning on a Saturday, which is something I usually don't know, but I do know it today. I passed mile 500 yesterday. Very exciting, but it doesn't really feel like I've walked that long. I don't know. Weird. Usually I like to be out of my tent and like moving by around this time, but it was like really cold and rainy yesterday and it's still kind of wet outside. So I thought I'd give myself a little time to like enjoy the inside of my tent before I emerge back into all of it. So I'm sitting here with my coffee and maybe I'm going to eat something and, you know, eventually everything will get packed back up and stuffed back into my damp backpack and I'll start moving again. I think I've got about 16 and a half miles today. I'm going to end up at Hikertown and I've heard that there's kittens, so that's exciting. So the last few days have been kind of a blur. Kind of a flurry of like craziness and fun and just PCT shenanigans. We're in this stretch where there are a lot of like really famous Trail Angel destinations really close together, and so like my days are going to be inaccurate as I try to describe this to you because I never remember like how long ago something was, because like time passes really slowly out here, but at the same time it moves really fast. So I don't know, but just rough estimate, I think 2 days ago or maybe 3 days ago I arrived at Hiker Heaven in Agua Dulce and spent the night there, spent most of the next day there, hiked out, and then the next day, I arrived at Casa de Luna, which both of these places are just these, like, oases in the desert where, you know, these people open their homes up every year for dirty hobos to come through and enjoy themselves, eat, drink, be merry. Casa de Luna is really... all of these places are amazing, but Casa de Luna was, like... another world, because you get there and it's like, hey, we've got taco salad, put on a Hawaiian shirt, go set your tent up in the magical forest in the backyard, like here's some chairs and couches for you to sit in and all of your friends that you've ever known. So like everybody refers to it as a vortex because like there's there's food provided in the morning and at night. So what can very easily happen is you arrive, you eat dinner, you're like, okay, I'll spend the night and then I'll get out in the morning. Well, you wake up and then there's pancakes and coffee and it's like, oh, hey, why don't you just stay for pancakes and coffee? Oh, okay, yeah, I'll leave after pancakes and coffee. But then you have pancakes and coffee and it's like, oh, hey, why don't you just stick around, paint a rock, you know, go hang in the hammocks, enjoy yourself. Oh, okay, I'll stick around. Why don't you just stay for taco salad? You see, it's just the endless cycle. So I had to get out before my second taco salad or else I never was going to leave. So I left Casa de Luna two nights ago and then I hiked yesterday through the strangest weather I've seen yet. Because I've been through some cloud cover and some like fog and ice and mist, but I haven't seen that in like the desert. And this is a section that we were all expecting to be like super, super hot, super dry. But yesterday all day, it was like 60 degrees, couldn't see a damn thing. No views, nothing. And normally I don't even hike with music, or my earbuds in at all. Just because, like, I like to be aware of what's around me and, I don't know, I like to be present to what I'm doing out here. But it gets tough when you're hiking, like, miles upon miles and all you're seeing is the exact same thing. Like, it's beautiful, you know, lush greenery to each side of me, but there's nothing beyond that. It's just, like, fog and gray mist. So listened to a lot of music yesterday and podcasts and good morning. Somebody just walked past my tent. I don't know who it was, but you gotta be friendly. Anyway, so it was just like a really gloomy day yesterday. So I was listening to music and everything and went like a good 17 miles. My goal was to make it to 500 and I did. So that always feels good when you like, I don't know, set a goal for the day and then you make it. Today I will arrive at another one of these famous places, Hiker Heaven. No, Hiker Heaven was Agua Dulce. Hiker Town. See, these are all very easily confused, especially because Casa de Luna is also referred to as hippie daycare. So it's all H's, you know, it's confusing. But anyway, Hiker Town, I will be there tonight. I'll play with some kittens. And then I'm going to keep on rolling. I've got, you know, 200 more miles until Kennedy Meadows reach the gateway to the Sierra. And honestly, couldn't be more excited. But also, everyone's saying that they're like discouraging people from entering the Sierra right now because of the snow cover. So we're just going to see what happens. I like to play by ear as much as possible. But anyway, that's my update. But I wanted to take a second and just talk about something that I've noticed to be really important on trail and that I think, I don't know, can make or break your hike, but not just your hike, like honestly your entire life. And that is just, first of all, presence of mind, and then also positivity of mindset. And I don't know, this can be an interesting topic because there's a lot of difficulties that we go through out here, you know. The hiking is usually not super hard, but it can be very frustrating, especially all day if you're going up really steep inclines or down really steep declines. And then there are times when it really, really is like hard because of like the weather, especially if it's super, super hot and exposed, no shade. If it's super, super windy and you're being blown over and it seems like you can't even take a step without being knocked over by the wind, it can be really, really cold and, you know, to the point where all you can think about is your freaking thumbs because you can't, like, get them warm. You know, I've talked before about how mentally it can be pretty tough just to stay driven, stay motivated, especially if you're out here by yourself. But something that I've noticed lately is that, like, even though it's hard, there's a tendency out here to, like, overblow the difficulties, I think. And I think it comes from a good place. Like, I was talking to my friend Rafiki, and he made the point that, like, a lot of the whining and complaining that people do, it's to commiserate, you know? It's like we're bonding over this, like, shared struggle that we all have, which is, you know, it's real. Like, it's a, the struggle is real. And I don't want to take away from the difficulty of what we're doing out here, but I think it gets to a point where people are complaining, like, all the time, and it's just basically because, like, I don't know, they don't know what else to say. And I think you'll hear that a lot, like, just out in normal life too. You know, people will complain about something just because it's like it's a topic of conversation to start, right? You maybe don't know what else to say, so you're like, oh, how about that rain out there? Like, sure is a hot one. It's like, yeah, it is a hot one. We all know that it's hot. And, like, that's how I feel out here constantly, just like, I don't know, people draw so much attention to the negatives out here, and I'm guilty of it too. You know, everyone is guilty of it at sometimes, but I get pretty frustrated when I hear people, like, it's all they talk about, especially when we're in, like, a really beautiful place, or we're, like, out of what was the difficulty, right? Like, perfect example in my mind is I was up on the top of Mount San Jacinto. And this is a peak that you can climb up. It's not actually on the trail, but it's the second highest mountain in Southern California. And the trail goes really near it, and you can take a side trail to go up the top of it. So most people will do that. And me and one of my friends, we got up to the top around the same time, and I was talking to him. And it was a Saturday, and it could have been a Sunday. I don't know. I just know it was a weekend. But we were up there. And I'm sitting there, I'm just, like, so happy because I've just endured this really hard climb. I wasn't used to the altitude at that point, so, like, every step above 6,000 feet for me was, like, a challenge, you know? I'm, like, stopping to catch my breath every, like, 20 feet that I walk. And I get up to the top, and I'm just so grateful. It's beautiful. I can see this immense view all the way from, like, Palm Desert, like, even east of Palm Desert. All the way west to the towns that are a little bit, you know, I'm sitting here acting like I know what I'm talking about. Some towns, but you could see, like, really far down I-10, and it was just beautiful. You could see the mountains around you. You can see the pine trees and the snow on top of this mountain that you're on. And then below you, it's just desert, just, like, blank tan desert. And it was gorgeous. And my friend was like, oh man, you know, we got to go down 4,000 feet in the next 14 miles, da-da-da-da-da, elevation profiles, and just talking about all this stuff that he's not looking forward to. And I'm just like, I was just getting so annoyed because it's like, okay, dude, like, I don't care. Like, I'm going to deal with the elevation loss when I have to deal with it. Right now, I'm on top of this mountain that I worked really hard to get to the top of. I don't want to talk about, like, anything else but how badass this is. Or, you know, whatever is related to how badass it is. And then he was like, man, we really picked the wrong day to come up here. It's so crowded. And it's like, like, yeah, it is crowded. There's a lot of people here enjoying themselves, but, like, there's plenty of places where you can sit and enjoy the view. And it's kind of fun to see how many people are, like, taking time out of their weekend to come up and climb a mountain. Like, that's cool to me. And then, like, the last example from this particular instance, he was like, you know, I think, in a couple of days, I'm thinking I'm going to come down and then I'm going to come back up to see it at sunrise. I'm like, what are you talking about? You're going to come back up this mountain? Like, it was not an easy mountain to get up, first of all. And I mean, I just looked at him and I just was like, dude, you're here right now. Like, you're going to go down and you're going to come back up again just to see it at sunrise. Like, we're going to see hundreds of sunrises and hundreds of sunsets, and it doesn't matter where we are, they're going to happen. But right now, you're on top of, you know, 10,000 some odd feet, and like, this is the moment. Like, this is when you're here, so just like, take it and be in it and be appreciative of it. And I don't know, it was just very obvious to me at that point that like, there are many ways to look at every single scenario out here, and if you choose to look at it in a negative light, then, you know, that's your choice. You can look at it that way. But if you choose to look at it as an adventure, as the adventure that you chose, then that's what it's going to be. It's going to be fun. It's going to be badass. And sometimes it's going to be hard, but it's going to be worth it. And it's never going to be anything to whine about. Because the thing is, like, yeah, it's hot. And yeah, the climbs are hard, whether they're up or they're down. Yeah, sometimes it's crowded. Yeah, sometimes it's windy. Sometimes it's cold. But if you didn't know that all of that was going to happen coming into this, then, like, you didn't really do the extensive research or preparation required. So, like, you know coming into this that that's what it's going to be. So you can take it and say, ah, this sucks, it's so hot. Or you can say, man, here I am, this is the PCT, I'm in the desert. Like, I mean, it's a simple, like, little change of mind, but I think it can make a really big difference. And to me, like, having, I don't know, thinking that way is really contagious and addictive, just to, like, constantly look at the negative side of things. And then, like, if you're always talking about it, like, you know, not everyone wants to talk about, you know, how long the next water carry is going to be, or how many thousands of feet elevation you're going to gain in the next 3 miles. Like, you're just bringing that negative energy to everybody else around you who might just be trying to enjoy themselves. And when we start to think constantly about either what's ahead and, you know, I mean, you need to think about what's ahead. You need to plan. You need to plan for your water, for your food, for your mileage often, you know, how you're going to get around a detour or whatever. But, like, you, if you start thinking constantly about what's ahead as far as, like, oh, all the climbing, or there's a wind advisory, or it's going to be cold, or blah, 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 or thinking about what's in the past, what did you miss, what did you not get to experience, who did you not get to see, blah, 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 blah. All those things just take you out of the current moment. And, like, I mean, I don't know about anybody else, but this, I've been here over a month now, and, like, this month and change has gone by so fast. And I just know that, like, I only have 4 or 5 more of those left. So if I'm always thinking about what's ahead, then that means I'm not enjoying what time that I do have right now. And when I get to, like, Oregon or whatever, I'm going to be looking back and be wishing that I had just enjoyed myself in Southern California while I was here. You know, so I'm trying to just make the most of every moment, even the moments that suck, because that's the adventure that we signed up for. We signed up for some of those moments that suck because, like, it makes you so grateful for the beautiful moments, and you experience so many of them out here. I don't know if you can hear, but I'm, like, getting emotional right now. Typical. Yeah, so that's my little spiel. I think it's pretty important to stay positive and to stay present, because this is all we got, you know? We're here, we made this choice, and we worked hard for it. So, damn, we have to make the most of it. So, whatever you're doing out there, you people, I hope that you make the most of it. And, yeah, so I'm gonna finish up my little morning coffee, chilling in the tent, and then I'm gonna pack up and get going and just keep plodding along. And through the moisture and the sun, I'll try to be grateful for all of it. That's all I got for you today. Enjoy life. Hey guys, this is Afternoon Delight, and I am with Steel Toe from Orlando, Florida. And we are around mile 315, just after the Mojave River Forks Dam. So we are here today to talk about the theme of pushing and maintaining a schedule and just like how you feel about that. So I know for me, coming into this, I was adamant about 20-mile days and getting to where I needed to be. And I'm realizing now that that put a lot more pressure on me than I thought, and I really stopped enjoying it for a little bit of time. So what are your thoughts on that? Like, did you have an idea of what you wanted, and maybe now is that different?
I have to agree with you. Going in, I'd say I was overly ambitious. I actually planned to complete this hike in 100 days or less. I'm sure there's quite a few people who had the same plan, and obviously as I've gone, you know, coming into the desert and the heat that I hadn't planned for as much as I should have, I've obviously slowed down quite a bit, and part of that is a result of injury, but the other part of that is, you know, wanting to take the time to enjoy the hike. And I guess lately, the last few days especially, I've been slowing way down, doing 10, 15 mile days just to take it all in.
Right. Yeah. Do you feel like, or where do you feel like that pressure came from before? And like, is it gone now? Is it still there? Is it from, you know, people and wanting to be around groups, or just, I mean, you have the food supply thing too. Like, you only have a certain amount of food for each section.
There's a couple of different pressures. You kind of mentioned all of them. I think in the beginning, it was self-inflicted. Mm-hmm. It was sort of a goal, you know, wanting to complete the hike at a certain pace and a certain time frame. And obviously, everyone has financial pressures, outside pressures.
Right.
Friends, family, other plans. But as the hike went on, I think even within like the first few days, just meeting a group of people you got along with, the pressure, it became, you know, trying to keep up with them, trying to keep the group together. Right. And that was really apparent like the first 2 weeks. We could see that when we stopped in Julian, all the way up through Idlewild. Mm-hmm. And I think after that though, the group started to slowly separate, and the pressure dissipated a little bit.
Yeah.
And ever since then, it's been, if anything, it's self-inflicted or necessitated by, you know, your resupply. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not the best food planner. So I have to push, because I only plan for one extra day beyond, beyond my normal resupply.
Right. What That's about fair. You? I think that Well, it's definitely coming from, you know, wanting to be around people, but I've realized a lot that whether you're, you know, quicker, slower pace, or you get hurt, or you want an extra zero, you really end up leapfrogging with people that you thought were miles ahead of you or miles behind, and there's no way to predict that. So even if you don't see someone for a few days, you end up seeing them, and it's, like, really exciting at that time. But it's way too difficult to stay on that schedule and to just keep trying to, like, stay with certain people that aren't your pace.
Yeah.
And it is really nice to just, like, be more mindful and relax and try to find that balance. I think that's fair. In terms of, like, towns, too, I feel like there's a little bit of pressure, or there was, maybe I was putting on myself, to, you know, get there, resupply, continue on, maybe take a zero if I'm feeling I need it. But now, after feeling how hard you are, like how tough it is on your feet, it's kind of like you really do need that zero. And even an extra...
Or
Or three even.
Yeah, you can't you can't be hard on yourself. What you're doing, like how many miles a day, is really tough, and avoiding overuse injuries, I think, is important. Do you feel like, in terms of if you were to do this again, you know, with this theme in mind, is there any advice? You know, we're only like almost a month into the desert. Is there any advice you'd give yourself?
Quite a bit. Train more beforehand if you really do plan on keeping a schedule.
Right.
You know, doing 20 miles a day consecutively will wear on your body very fast, and just getting your feet used to it. I'm sure everyone's heard that advice, but it really, really is probably the most useful thing you can do.
I'd agree.
But then more importantly, just be willing to slow down.
Yeah.
Take an extra zero here and there, or three.
Don't feel pressured.
Yeah, if your body needs it, take it, because the goal is completing the hike, not rushing through everything.
Right. It's about the journey.
Yeah. As cliche as that is.
It is.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, thanks for talking with us.
Thank you for having me.
This is Afternoon Delight and Steel Toe signing out.
Hey guys, so it's day 12 of the CDT, and this is my wild card submission. I talked to Zach, your lovely host, a little bit, and he suggested that I do a comparison, like physically and mentally, of where I'm at right now on my CDT hike compared to where I was at this time on my AT and PCT hike. And I thought that was a pretty solid idea. So right now on the CDT, I am walking on a paved road with no shoulder. That's pretty standard right now. I've done already over maybe 20 miles of paved road walking on this trail, and that is definitely different than both the AT and PCT. So my mental state about like 2 weeks in of this trail right now was super, super great until probably about yesterday. I'm on an alternate, which is also different about the CDT. I'm on my second alternate of the trail already. It's just, you know, there's not one way to get places. There's more than one a lot of times on the CDT. So I'm on an alternate right now called the Gila, and it takes you down the Gila River in New Mexico. And it's the most common alternate because there's a lot of water, and if you take the Black Mountain route, there's like no water for almost the entire section. So I'm hiking the Gila here, which means there's too much water. So I've crisscrossed the river maybe 20 times today, and I've only done about 16 miles. So it's pretty rough whenever you're slogging through the water so many times, and you know, your feet are just soaked, your shoes are heavy, full of mud, and it's been mentally taxing. And physically, it hasn't been so bad because it's pretty flat, so there's not a lot of uphill and downhill, but mentally, it's hard just like being soaked all the time, constantly walking out and being hot in the sun, freezing in the water, repeating this, and then just bushwhacking because there's no trail and getting cut and stung by all sorts of weird plants. So morale's been a bit low for about the past day. But overall, I'm still looking at the long term, and I know it's going to be fine, and that these are just hard days. And there's always going to be hard days, and this is just going to be one of many. And how I know that is by looking back and remembering my AT start, where I was terrified in my first days. I was absolutely in love with the trail. I knew it was where I was supposed to be, but it was so hard. I could do maybe 9 or 10 miles a day. My pack was way too heavy. My body, I thought I was fit. Everyone thinks they're, you know, normally fit. And I was for the general regular population, but I realized immediately that I was more thin than fit. I was just a slender person, and that doesn't translate to the most muscle, being able to carry the most weight on my back and, you know, walk for over 10 miles a day. So at that time, I was, you know, just slowly building up the miles, and probably about 2 weeks in, I had my lowest and my highest moment. I was camped by myself again. There was a couple other older guys that had camped near me, but I didn't really know them, and they weren't very friendly or talkative. I was getting really, really depressed. I, at one point, sat in my tent and contemplated if I could actively sprain my ankle more than it was already sprained to make myself unable to walk and have a good enough reason to quit. But then I laid in my tent and I read, thought about some things, and realized, like, no, that wasn't how I was going to end my first hike, that I was just going to keep going, and I just figure it out. And if I still hated life tomorrow, maybe I'd think about it then. And I got up and I hiked 16 miles for the very first time ever in my life. And I went into Franklin, North Carolina, where my best friend from childhood, her aunt happens to have a house, and some of their family ended up taking me in and taking care of me for a couple days. And next thing I know, life was just looking a whole lot better. And the last thing I wanted to do was quit. I was actually getting really anxious to get back on trail after having had such hard days leading up to it. I actually realized I couldn't wait to get back out there. And then I met some, you know, friends, people my age, and ended up having an awesome time, and really things got so much better from there. And then on the PCT, I actually didn't really have many hard days until I got to the Sierra. So I was pretty lucky on my PCT hike. I mean, physically, there was always challenges. Water, you know, was always an issue in the desert, and I had, you know, some blisters, but not too bad. Some pain, but nothing unbearable. And I think my body was just a lot more ready, and mentally, I really had nowhere else I wanted to be. So I was so ready for the PCT. It really took until I got to the Sierra and walked into the snow that I really wasn't expecting, that suddenly my mental state changed. So physically and mentally, I would say I was probably strongest on the PCT versus the AT, or at least how I'm feeling right now on the CDT. I know it will change. I know I'm going to feel great, hopefully in an hour, hopefully in 2 hours, but we'll see. And I just, you know, I know I'm not going to quit. At this point, I just know. And it's, I don't have to struggle with those thoughts like I did on the AT hike, where in the beginning I did struggle with the thought of quitting or not. We're here, I don't really have that reoccurring thought. I just think, I just know I'm going to go. I know I'm going to keep going. And it's going to all work out no matter what. And so that is where I'm at right now, 12 days into my CDT hike. And yeah, I'm about to do some more road walking and then hopefully see one of the oldest settlements, the Gila Cliff dwelling. So hopefully that'll make all of that slogging through water and road walking worth it. I'm about to go see some really cool stuff. All right, well, this is Rabbit signing off.
And that's it for today's show. In our next episode, our hikers answer a set series of questions about their diet, their bodies, and their gear. We also hear from one of our hikers who has decided to get off trail, and we learn why this is the case. If you enjoyed the show, please consider supporting us through our Patreon page at patreon.com/backpackerradio. As little as $1 per month gets you access to additional content, including a monthly video bonus show Chance and I do exclusively for our patrons. You can also support Backpacker Radio by reviewing us on iTunes, subscribing, and/or broadcasting your love for this podcast with anyone who will listen. Follow us on Instagram at Backpacker Radio, on Twitter at Backpacker Pod, and on Facebook. As always, thanks for tuning in, and happy hiking.